As Americans, we are all familiar with the annual holiday of Thanksgiving. We're often told that the founders of the nation wanted to keep religion out of the public square, yet we have this annual holiday of a day of Thanksgiving to Almighty God. To this very day, we have that holiday. We even have a national day of prayer, which is now the first Thursday of May. Of course, it's not a day that you're not going to get the mail, but still, during the settling era of British North America, so let's say 1607 through 1770, roughly around there, there were actually many days of fasting and prayer and days of thanksgiving as well. The practice continues also during the founding era as well, meaning the mid-1700s through around 1800. Even Thomas Jefferson called for a day of fasting and prayer for his state of Virginia when he was governor. That was in the early 1770s. Stephen McDowell is the president of the Providence Foundation, not to be confused with Providence Forum, which was founded by Dr. Peter Loback and donated to Coral Ridge Ministries. And I, Jerry Newcomb, had the privilege to lead Providence Forum. But in the meantime, Stephen McDowell of Providence Foundation joins us to discuss days of prayer in early America. Stephen, welcome back to the program. Thanks again for joining us.
Well, it's great to be with you, Jerry, as always.
Now, I've heard you say in one context that during the American War, the War for Independence, that at least 15 different times or so, the Continental Congress actually called for days of fasting and prayer, and or maybe just days of prayer, maybe even days of Thanksgiving in some cases. Tell us about that, the 15 days. And then after that, I'd like us to talk about, well, what happened even before the 1770s?
Yeah, throughout the American Revolution, our civil leaders on the national level proclaimed, as you mentioned, at least 15 days of prayer and fasting and prayer and thanksgiving. Now, they were just carrying on the tradition of what we had done from the very beginning, because states had done that, localities had done that, as we can talk about here in just a minute. So their action was not new. In fact, their action was just a reflection of what they had always done, because, see, the founders of America, they were biblically minded. They understood that if we obey God and his precepts, it will go well with us. His blessings will come. But if we disobey him, we have problems or go backwards, as Jeremiah said. Therefore, these people believing Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28 talks about the blessing and cursing that comes when we are obedient or disobedient. So when they had a calamity, they would proclaim a day of prayer and fasting, repenting of their sins, Lord, pour out your mercy upon us, grant us your grace. And then when God answered their prayer, they would proclaim a day of prayer and thanksgiving to give thanks to God because he saw their heart, forgave their sin, and poured out his blessing. This was what motivated them to do that, not just during the Revolution, but from, you know, the very founding of America. So there's a lot of examples. You know, the first day the Continental Congress proclaimed a day of prayer and fasting, it took place on July 20th, 1775. This was when the martial law was to go into effect, and because the king was going to shut down the port of Boston in response to the Boston Tea Party and them resisting him. So the Continental Congress, they first met together, and they then decided, we're going to proclaim a day of prayer and fasting because we want to show that we're relying upon God. In fact, so on, that proclamation was issued in June 1775, and I'll just read just a little bit of it. It says that they appealed to the great governor of the world, who frequently influences the minds of men to serve the wise and gracious purposes of his providential government. So they went on to recommend to Christians of all denominations to assemble for public humiliation, fasting, and prayer. So their response, our This is the early Continental Congress when representatives from each of the states gathered together, and this was the first times this was happening. Their response was, we need to cry out to God. So they issued this proclamation recommending everybody in all the states go to church, fast, and pray and cry out to God, as that proclamation said. And, you know, it's estimated that about 2 million people of the 3 million total inhabitants of America observed that day of prayer and fasting. So these people were serious. You know, this was not just like some modern people that might be aware of this say, well, yeah, that's just what they did. They were just religious people and did stuff like that. No, well, that's my point. Yeah, they did. They were. This is something that came from their heart, that they believed in a living God who would hear their prayers and respond to him. So that was the first one, and they did it throughout the war, as I said, when they after victories, like at the surrender of Burgoyne at Saratoga, Continental Congress proclaimed a day of prayer and thanksgiving. Give thanks to God. He answered our prayer at the last major battle of the war, the Battle of Yorktown. Congress proclaimed a day of prayer and thanksgiving. Let's go to church and give thanks to God. And back, Continental Congress did go to church. They went to a Lutheran church in Philadelphia and gave thanks to God. And of course, throughout the colonies, people were observing this as well. So this emanated from a people who had a living faith in God and believed that God would respond to their requests.
But what about the separation of church and state?
Yeah. You know, the modern concept of that is that God can have nothing to do with public life. And this certainly wasn't the belief of anybody in early America, Thomas Jefferson or anyone else. And it definitely wasn't the belief of our civil leaders, because they, of course, not only proclaim days of prayer and fasting, but a lot of in localities, they go to observe this meeting in the place where civil government met. It was typical that the meeting house was also the house where civil leaders met. So to them, they believed that civil government and the church were divine institutions, that each of those had a unique purpose and responsibility, and each should not encroach upon the other's duty and responsibilities. That's what it meant to them, or you have a jurisdictional separation of the function of the church from the function of the state. And of course, that concept of wall of separation, that term wasn't used anywhere but by Jefferson in a letter. It's not an official thing, and it was misconstrued in 1947 by the Supreme Court. But Jefferson was using that phrase to mean that the civil government can't encroach upon the freedoms of the church. And he was going to keep that from happening. In particular, he wasn't going to set up any national church, or he was going to keep anybody from trying to do that as well. So, it's impossible to separate God from government. Why? Because he's sovereign over all government. He's the ultimate governor among the nations. Our founders would have understood that clearly. They believed that they didn't want to have a national church after we became a nation, like they had back in Europe. They recognized that problems would arise from having that, but they no way wanted to separate godly principles from civil governance, because they understood if you did that, you can't have a free society. It's upon religion and morality that our whole nation was built.
You know, Thomas Jefferson, since we're talking about him for a moment there, he said, can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed the conviction that they are the gift of God? In other words, our liberties are the gift of God, and the people need to believe that because it's true. Now, speaking of Thomas Jefferson, I understand that when he was governor of Virginia in 1774, he wrote up a day of prayer. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, the first proclamation he authored was 1774. Now, of course, he wasn't governor because we weren't a state yet. He did that later in 1779 as governor. But in 1774, June 1st, the Boston Port Bill was going to go into effect. And so the people that was up in Boston, the British were shutting the port of Boston. But down in Virginia, to show their support for their brethren in Boston, who would suffer greatly when that happened, because 90% of commerce went in and out of the port, that the governor had dissolved the legislatures. They couldn't officially meet, but they went up and met in the tavern down the street from where they used to meet.
This is in Colonial Williamsburg, right?
Williamsburg, exactly. And Thomas Jefferson was among these group of people that were discussing what can we do to show our support. And so he then wrote a resolution appointing the first day of June as a day of fasting, humiliation, and prayer, devoutly to implore the divine interposition to give to us one heart and one mind. And he goes on, you know, that he wrote this resolution recommending everybody in Virginia go to church on June 1st. That's the day that the port was going to be shut down. Pray, cry out to God. And they also ordered that the members of the house attend church. And they did. And there was a Reverend Mr. Glaucon who preached a sermon at the church. This would have been Bruton Parish Church there on Duke of Gloucester Street in Williamsburg. So the members of the house, selected by the people in Virginia, went to church that day. And they were doing it all throughout Virginia to observe a day that a resolution authored by Thomas Jefferson. And it's interesting that one person who observed this said, never since my residence in Virginia have I seen so large a congregation as was this day assembled to hear divine service. And Thomas Jefferson said of what was taking place here, he said, the people met generally with anxiety and alarm in their countenances, and the effect of the day through the whole colony was like a shock of electricity, arousing every man and placing him erect and solidly on his center. So he recognized that this day was helping to show to the people the seriousness of what was taking place, and that they began their action of support for their brethren with prayer and with hearing a sermon. In fact, the sermon preached at Bruton Parish Church, the text of it was, be strong and of good courage, fear not, nor be afraid of them, for the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. And so here we have part of our national motto is E Pluribus Unum. That's Latin, one out of the many, or from the many one. This is the concept of Christian union. We have taking place the people in the 13 colonies beginning to unite. They join together. And the reason they could join in an external union is because of the internal unity of ideas and principles that had been sown by the church primarily for decades and generations before this. And so we have a miracle of the American Revolution, a uniqueness of part of our government, is this idea of Christian union, E Pluribus Unum, and we see it uniquely taking place here on June 1st in Virginia, when the people throughout gathered together in prayer, crying out to God and standing with their brethren there. So John Adams said of this incident, when not just Virginia and Boston, but all the colonies were uniting together in this, and John Adams said that 13 clocks were made to strike together, a perfection of mechanism which no artist had ever before effected. In other words, he's recognizing what a miraculous thing for all the colonies to begin to join together in these events. It's like 13 clocks, if you have them in your room, they all strike perfectly at the same time. That's a miracle. And so he was acknowledging the miracle of the colonies coming together to face their common enemy of their liberty.
That is amazing. And on that note, we will end. ProvidenceFoundation.com. Stephen McDowell, thank you so much. All the best.
Same to you.